What's going on, everybody? This is Nico, and you are listening to yet another edition of your favorite podcast in the whole wide world. This is the Nico Show for Monday, July 31st, 2017. Holy crap, July is over. August is literally 24 hours away, and here we are. Man, the summer has been flying. Thanks for joining me. Happy to be back. I've had such a great summer, and I hope you can say the same, although it is going way too fast for all of us. I've just had a great couple of weeks, and I apologize again for not doing this show on a weekly basis. All I can say is life has been so busy, but so much fun, and that's how I want my life to be. And sometimes that means that podcasts don't get figured into the equation, and I have been negligent in keeping you up to date with everything going on, but I've been having such a great time, and I can't wait to tell you all about it. This is the Nico Show, where I sit here, you and me, having a one-sided conversation about the ups, the downs, the ins, the outs of this life of mine. I've had a great week. I'll just get right to it. I have been so fortunate with the quality of live entertainment that I have seen in the year 2017. This has been, in terms of events that I have paid for with a ticket and the experience, the return on investment that I've gotten on that ticket purchased, there has never been a better year for me. I am just hitting these things out of the park. I went and saw the Boston Celtics play the Washington Wizards at game six of in the NBA playoffs of the, wasn't Eastern Conference Championship game. It was the quarterfinal, semifinal. It was game six. John Wall hits a game-winning three, a buzzer beater, I believe. Maybe not. But it was a game-winning three to push that game into seven game, or push that series into seven games. Great live sports event. I saw the New York Yankees play the Baltimore Orioles, I think. Yes, they played the Orioles. And I got the VIP treatment. Me and a bunch of relatives sat in a MVP box, a like right behind home plate VIP experience. One of the great live sports going experiences I've ever had. I went and saw Bob Dylan, the greatest artist currently alive, the voice of a generation, and one of, I think, the defining live experiences of my life in terms of concerts and live music. Absolutely blew me away, a living legend in concert. And this weekend, I added two of those incredible experiences to the old resume. I shouldn't say this weekend, it was last weekend. I'm way behind on this. The two concerts that I saw could not have been more diametrically opposed to one another. Two completely different ends of the musical spectrum came together into an incredible weekend for me. First one, Kendrick Lamar. Old K-Dot. Kung Fu Kenny himself. I've been toying with the idea of seeing Kendrick for a while now. My brother and I were thinking about this for a couple of months. We knew that he was going to be in Boston Saturday night. He was going to be at TD Garden. For months, we put off getting these tickets because the DiGregorios are not necessarily known for their ambition nor punctuality. So we put it off. And the day before the show, I text my brother. I'm at work and I'm saying, you know what? Kendrick's going to be performing tomorrow. We still haven't gotten tickets. Sure, it's going to be an arm and a leg. Literally an arm and a leg. Like, I am here. I am officially a paraplegic now. paraplegic. No, I'm worse. I'm an amputee. I'm sitting here. I have no limbs because that was the cost to get these Kendrick tickets the day before the show. But we're like, you know what? We're going to regret this if we don't go. Kendrick has never been hotter. I mean, this is the peak of his fame, the peak of his artistry. I want to be able in 30 years to tell the story of seeing Kendrick live. You know, I love having that story. I know my dad used to tell me the story and still does to this day about when he saw Michael Jackson live in concert right after Thriller came out. It was like 86, because I think what, Thriller came out in 85? 86, Thriller is the number one album in the country. Michael is touring with the Jacksons, with his brothers. They're no longer the Jackson 5, they're the Jacksons. And half of the show was the Jacksons, and half of the show was Michael by himself. And they were in the pit at Mets Stadium. It's now Citi Field. I don't know what it is or what it was then. But Mets Stadium, they're like sixth row. Seeing Michael Jackson at the height of his fame. Just when he could not have been a bigger star. And to this day, he tells that story. And I think, wow, to be like at that show. To be in this massive arena filled with thousands and thousands of screaming fans. I'm in the sixth row seeing a legend. And I have a feeling, and I've said this many times, we did that whole Kendrick podcast, that that Kendrick has the potential to be that sort of transcendent artist, to be an icon. So we went, and we paid a ridiculous amount of money, and we had great seats, and we got to see him on, I believe, the third or fourth stop of the damn tour. Couple observations. This is gonna sound really horrible, but I am horrible. What do you want from me? So my brother and I, we go, we're hanging out in Boston all day, having a great time, and we go to the show at around 7, and we're waiting in this menace of a line. Just the largest line I've ever been involved in my life. And I begin scanning the crowd. I just get a good look at the people, trying to get the finger, or my finger on the pulse of exactly what's going on here. You know, just taking a quick little inventory of my fellow concert goer. And I turn to my brother, because I made an observation. And he tended to agree with my observation. And it was a lot of white people. I mean, I don't know how else to put this. Like, just, you know, a lot of white people at the concert. Kind of looked like a very long bedsheet, this line. Just a really long bedsheet. Like, if you were looking at it from space, you might need sunglasses. Just very just very white. That's all I'm saying. Just very white. A lot of Caucasians at this Kendrick show in Boston. And I said to my brother, he agreed, that, you know, it's a little weird. It's a little strange. You wouldn't expect an artist like Kendrick, who is not only a black man, but makes music specifically for black audiences, specifically to empower black audiences, and has been used as sort of an anthem for many of the African-American movements in this country, you wouldn't expect an artist like that to draw these sorts of crowds. You know, this is not like Bruno Mars. He's not making mainstream popular music that appeals to a multitude of experiences. Kendrick's experience is very specific in that. And that's not to make any sort of value judgments. I'm obviously a huge Kendrick fan. I just thought to myself, man, it's a little strange, all the white people here. And then I thought to myself, and I told this to my brother as well, we are these people. Like, who the hell? Who the hell are we? Man, it's so, all these crackers here. That's like, that's what I was saying. Just looking at myself and being like, oh, wait a minute, that's right. I'm a white person too. Maybe they like Kendrick for the same reason that I like Kendrick. It's because he makes good music. Fucking racist. I'm just the worst. I'm the worst person. But this is all is to say, we get in the show and we're sitting down, and I look at this dude in front of us, and he's there with his girlfriend, and he is wearing a sky blue Titleist golf shirt. A polo. The type of shirt that is exclusively worn by trust fund kids and me. That's the whole demographic. Those are the only ones that wear a sky blue polo shirt. And this dude's in front of us, and he's a, you know, a white guy. He's white. He's like me. However, I was wearing clothing that was a little more appropriate for this setting. You know, I was wearing a t-shirt, and it was, you know, a little darker, and it was, it was a little more hip. Not to say that I dress hip, but it wasn't like this guy who looked like he was at his sports banquet. And I say to my brother, this is concerning. This is very concerning. I'm looking at this crowd. Again, the eyes are hurting a little bit because it is very, very bright. I need some SPF in this bitch. And I'm saying to myself, this vibe isn't going to be right. There is no way that this dude in front of us is a Kendrick fan. Like, how many songs from Good Kid, Mad City could this guy name? And we set the over-under at, like, 0.5. Because I don't think he can name one Kendrick song from Good Kid, Mad City. Maybe he knows a few from Damn. Maybe the girlfriend is a Kendrick fan and she sort of just dragged him along because she likes the song Love. And she likes the song with Rihanna on it, Loyalty. She wants to see Kendrick because everybody wants to see Kendrick. He's the new hot artist. It's cool to like Kendrick now. And they have mistaken him for a mainstream pop artist when he's really a very serious hip-hop musician. And we had a similar theory for just about everybody else in the room that wasn't of a certain ethnicity. Again, totally racist, totally uncalled for. And I can assure you, ladies and gentlemen, proven completely wrong. When this show starts and the white people in this crowd lose their fucking minds. This was the most wild, insane, the only word that I can use to describe it, and again, I am cringing and I am sensing the cringing from everybody in podcast land. The only word I can use is lit. This is the most lit show I have ever been at in my life. And even Kendrick, as the show ends, says, you know what? We've been in a bunch of cities. We were just in Brooklyn. I was in DC last night. I was in Philly. I don't know what has gotten into this crowd, but you guys have somehow topped all of those crowds. It was the only show where they moshed right in front of the stage, a massive mosh pit in TD Garden. The greatest energy, just the most fun, visceral, exciting concert experience I think I've ever been to, because I don't go to that many pop concerts. But I was so proven wrong by my white people in Boston. I lived in Boston for a year. I think you all know this. I went to school there for my freshman year of college. I know how Boston people are. There is a, I hate saying this, but a tinge of underlying racism in that city that doesn't really exist in any other northeastern cities. New York is certainly not that way. Philly is certainly not that way. I mean, Hartford doesn't really count. That's not really a northeast city. But there is something unique to that zip code that just sort of is whiter than it likes to put on. But that did not affect their level of enjoyment for this rap concert. Absolutely insane. And I have never sweat, screamed, danced, jumped up and down more in my life than I did during the 80 minutes that Kendrick was on stage. And I gotta give Titleist guy credit. I gotta give old Blue Eyes in front of me a lot of credit. That dude knew the words to every single song. He was not a bandwagon guy. These were OG Kendrick fans, the type that you want to see a Kendrick show with, and I could not recommend his show more. He just makes great music. The dude is not a bandwagon Like, I'm a passing fad, just a phase for the music industry. This guy makes serious records that have mainstream appeal, that are incredible listening experiences, and are even more incredible as live experiences. He's just a great musician, and I think he's one of the great musicians that we have. I will say, here's all I'm going to say. If I am to give the man one advice, one piece of advice, and I will, I loved his set. I loved the ninjas that came up and started fighting each other during the interludes. Love the set list. Love the orgasmic video sequences that played in between songs. All great. Loved the Kung Fu Kenny shit. Loved all of the martial arts shit. Was great. If you're the biggest star in the world, though, you are headlining a massive tour, you are selling out giant arenas, one opener. One opening act. I can't take this two opening act shit. Two guys in front of him. This guy named Dram, who I had never heard of. D.R.A.M. All capital letters, Dram. He was actually pretty good. He had a couple pretty catchy songs, and he's silly. He's obviously a silly, fun guy. The type of guy that Kendrick loves keeping around because it makes him look good. He was kind of a clown, but a fun set that lasted about 25 minutes. That's enough. Like, bring him on, warm up the crowd, and then let's get this over with. Let's just do 2 hours. In, out, 2 hours. He only does 80 minutes. Let's get Dram doing 20 minutes. Beautiful 2 hour show. Everybody is happy that they came. After Dram comes Travis Scott, who I can't stand except for the one song that he does with Kendrick. He comes out. I'm just not into that style of rap. I couldn't understand a word he was saying. It just all these guys, Future, him. I'm just not into it. Lil Yachty. Like, give me some lyrics that I can sink my teeth into. He's out there, does 20 minutes, all incredibly boring. I'm checking my watch. Then a giant mechanical falcon descends from the rafters. Travis Scott climbs on top of it, harnesses in, and does another 20 minutes on top of the falcon. All I'm saying is, if I'm Kendrick, I got ninjas coming out in about 45 minutes. I'm ready to eviscerate the audience. If I'm in dress rehearsal and I see the mechanical falcon coming from the rafters, I'm putting the kibosh on that one. I'm giving Travis Scott an ultimatum. Like, either that falcon does not come out on show night, or you're not coming out on show night. Unbelievable. The theatrics of it, it did not, by the way, distract from the banality of his music. Just the inessential garbage that filled a 40-minute set. By the time Kendrick came on, it was like 10. The show started at 7:30. Between all the wait time and the pointless openers, I was not having any of it. The type opener where I got up for about 20 minutes, and then the crowd slowly started to sit down and get bored with the whole affair. Was not into it at all. So let's just cut the opening acts short, Kendrick. Anyway, but you're Kung Fu Kenny. What am I? Who am I? I am but a humble podcaster. Thank you for an entertaining show Saturday night. But that show was done. I got home very late from Boston. I was exhausted. My voice was lost. My legs were like pudding from all the jumping up and down I was doing. And I crash, and I wake up Sunday morning, and I realize, oh shit, all I want to do is lay in bed and binge watch Netflix, something I haven't done in a number of weeks. I'm going to catch up on Twin Peaks. I'm going to maybe watch a movie. I'm going to stay in my pajamas all day. But instead, no, I have to go to another concert tonight. That's right, I have to go to another concert tonight. A few days prior, I bought a Groupon for Hans Zimmer. live at Foxwoods Casino with his orchestra. Yes, Hans Zimmer, famed film composer of Dark Knight, Lion King, and Pirates of the Caribbean fame. Musical genius. A man that is responsible for some of the defining artistic experiences of my life. Seeing Dark Knight in theaters with that booming score changed the way that I viewed cinema. Gave me a passion for filmmaking. A legend, a genius. And I was dreading having to see this show. I almost bailed. But no, I was armed with my $20 Groupon. I drove down to the casino with two friends, and we sat there and watched 3.5 hours of Hans Zimmer and an orchestra of about 40 with a full choir, three drummers, guitar players, just a whole mishmash of classical music and with a modern sound of like a rock band. And for 3.5 hours, we watched them perform some of the great film scores of all time. And I got to be honest with you. I adored Kendrick's concert. But this Hans Zimmer show blew it out of the fucking water. It was incredible. Hans Zimmer, I could not recommend this more to everybody out there. If you get a chance in your life, this was such an on a whim purchase from me. I saw the Groupon. I said, oh man, this would be so much fun. We got to go see this. A great sort of novelty show. I thought this would be a fun little novelty. We go. It's a cool time. It's a cool thing that we can say that we did. It's not something I would spend $200 on. You know, I would never think to do that. But if given the opportunity to see this cheap, this might be a fun story to tell. An interesting show. Ladies and gentlemen, we did not get an interesting show, though. We got an incredible rock concert. A legitimate rock concert with this 60-plus-year-old German man on stage with his band, a transformative concert experience like I have never seen before. I'm telling you, this is worth every penny. If you get the opportunity to see this, I believe he's still on tour. I'm not sure what his dates are in the future. I think he's out of the Northeast by now. He was just at Radio City this week. And I talked to some people that went to that show. Legendary. Legendary, legendary, legendary. I could not recommend this more enough. Here's the thing. Out of like most, I'm not a snob. Let me be very clear. I'm not a snob. I'm not there with my pinky up, getting dressed to go to the theater, grabbing my playbill, sitting down, crossing my legs, expecting a great night at the symphony. That's not the type of... I just went to Kendrick on Saturday night. I was just losing my mind, getting a wicked contact high with the amount of pot smoke filling the air at TD Garden. All right? I am... I'm not the dude that wants to sit there for 3.5 hours enjoying the artistry of some of the finest musicians in the world. And let me be very clear, these are the greatest musicians in the world, but if they were doing Beethoven for 3 hours, like, count me out. I'm gonna go see Dunkirk for a third time. It's just how I get down. They did not give that type of show. This was not the type of show where you sit down with your playbill with, you know, very polite rounds of applause that's respectful, that is traditional, that is boring, snobbish, and elitist. It was not that type of thing whatsoever. This was Hans coming out. Let me read the set list to this show really quick. Hold on, let me pull this up. He does Driving Miss Daisy, the song from Driving Miss Daisy is the first thing that he does. Slowly peels back layers of his orchestra. Curtains start to drop and revealing that there are more than 5 musicians, more than 10 musicians, more than 20 musicians on the stage. Does Driving Miss Daisy, Sherlock Holmes, and the Madagascar theme. Then goes into Crimson Tide and Angels and Demons. Again, not songs I necessarily recognized, but were gorgeous nonetheless. Then our boy grabs the mic and it's story time with Hans Zimmer. And listen, sign me up for that show. Sign me up for the one mic show where Hans Zimmer sits on a stool and tells showbiz stories about the time he was hanging out with Ridley Scott. But he talks about it's 9 in the morning and Ridley Scott called him and he was annoyed because he's a musician and he doesn't like getting up that early. He rolls out of bed, goes, "What do you want, Ridley?" And he says, "Hey, you want to make a Gladiator movie?" And of course, Hans says, "No, I don't want to make a Gladiator movie. The Gladiator movies are stupid. Sandals, swords, I'm not into that shit." But by the end of it, he told him the story of Gladiator, his idea for the film, and he was instantly in, and then plays the fucking medley from Gladiator. Same thing with the Da Vinci Code. Says, "Oh, when I was writing the score to the Da Vinci Code, we had the Louvre to ourselves." So I'm sitting in the Louvre trying to score this damn thing. I realized that the inspiration was not coming from the beautiful artwork that I was immersed in by myself, that I had unfettered access to. It came from looking outside of the Louvre onto this structure in the Paris skyline. Incredible. Just incredible story after incredible story. Does The Lion King, does Circle of Life from The Lion King with the original singer from The Lion King score? The, like, you know, "Yeah, Sabenya," like the original singer that did that comes out and goes, "Nah, Sabenya." And I'm like, that's the dude. That's the real guy. Like, you could see Lion King anywhere in the world at any given moment. It's on Broadway. It's at local theaters. High schools are doing it. You could pop on the movie. How often do you get to see the Lion King score performed with the real dude that did the Lion King score? Amazing. Pirates of the Caribbean, incredible. Does Rain Man, Thelma and Louise, which I did not realize that he scored, but he did Thelma and Louise. Does the theme from True Romance, which I was probably the only one in the room that recognized it because True Romance is one of my favorite movies of all time. The xylophone from True Romance was just unmistakable to me. Ugh. Just melted my heart. Then gets into a little Batman, does a little Man of Steel, the Wonder Woman theme, this song from Amazing Spider-Man 2, which is a horrible movie. But the song blows me away. Just this heavy metal guitar solo. Gorgeous. Then gets into The Dark Knight, and the crowd loses their minds as much as they lost their minds for Kendrick doing Humble. Same reaction when you hear that cello, the and it's like, oh my god, the Joker's in the house. Dark Knight medley, Interstellar, then his encore was the Inception medley. Does this piano riff that brought a tear to my eye? Amazing. An amazing end to a real rock concert. Between the lights, between the energy, the musicianship. Hans is not like conducting the orchestra, by the way. He's not just there with a baton. He's like playing keys and playing piano, playing timpani, playing acoustic guitar, telling stories, having a great time. The crowd is in his hands. He's there fist bumping. Every 2 seconds, he's fist bumping. And the crowd, along with him, starts fist bumping like, "Yeah, Hans! You rock! We love you!" Bringing back the emotional or the feelings that you get when you see these movies for the first time. You want to talk about musical genius. Kendrick is no doubt by any definition a musical genius. Hans Zimmer, two or three best musicians alive? I mean, they have to be. And has really contributed to each and every one of our lives more than we give him credit for. He may not be the guy that you listen to on a loop on Spotify. He may not have been the guy that was playing on the radio when you had your first kiss. You weren't necessarily dancing to his music at prom. But if you saw The Dark Knight, so much of that experience was him. If you saw The Lion King, so much of that experience was him. And that really put it into perspective for me when I saw him live. A more enjoyable experience than Kendrick. As much as, like, it was, maybe Kendrick was more fun. You know, maybe maybe I had a better time. I don't know. But I saw Hans, and the experience of seeing him, the better show, the better quality of music was undoubtedly at the Hans Zimmer concert. And man, oh man, would I recommend getting that $20 Groupon. It really just goes to show you, and I'll end on this because I'm going very long. I just wanted to brag about these two concerts so much this week. Really puts into context how broad the music landscape is, how much just, you know, diversity and depth and nuance there is, how different two concerts can be, but how similar your enjoyment of those concerts can be. I just love music, man. I just love music. I love going to shows. And if you don't see enough live concerts in a year, I know I used to be that guy. I didn't really go to a lot of concerts in high school, even in college, you know, every once in a while. Just go out. Spend the money. Spend the money on seeing a great show. Even if it's a little outside your purview, it's a little outside your taste. You know, if you don't necessarily think, oh, not really my cup of tea, see it, man, because it really does redefine the way that you listen to music. And it's just worth paying for. Experiences are worth paying for because now you have the memory of that for the rest of your life. Material stuff is cheap. Paying for an hour and a half that you're going to be telling stories about for years is way more worthwhile, and it's something that you can carry on for the rest of your life. So great. Man, what a great year it's been. What a fun summer. What a great year. And I love bragging about it on this podcast. It means the world to me. That's it, man. That was my weekend last weekend. This weekend, I'm taking it a little slow, recording podcasts and having a good time nonetheless. But there's so much more to get to. And it feels like there's so little time. Let's just do it right now. Guys, the world of politics has been turned upside down about 1,000 times. Like, I have whiplash after watching the news for the last week, just basking in the glory of this nonsense, of this craziness. And we're going to get into each and everything right here, right now, in the return, ladies and gentlemen, of your favorite segment. Let's get to it! The Trump presidency, baby. We're back. It's back. Your favorite segment. My favorite segment. You thought you had seen the last of him, just like everything else with Donald Trump. Just when you thought he wasn't going to win the election. Just when you thought he was done doing the Celebrity Apprentice. Just when you thought he had one too many mob scandals haunting his legacy, just when you thought you were done with old Donald Trump. I said last week or 2 weeks ago that there was other stuff in the world of politics consuming all of my attention. I was too obsessed with the Dwayne The Rock Johnson 2020 candidacy. I was too busy thinking about other stuff, and I was, to be honest with you, kind of sick of talking about Trump. So I sidelined this week in the Trump presidency. I said, hey, how about you sit this drive out? You know, take a breather. Get some old Gatorade in the system. Get those electrolytes flowing through your veins. And then when I need you, in that clutch moment, I want you to come in like the sports movie hero that you are and win this game for us. Well, I'll tell you what. I've had enough. We've been apart for far too long. And oh my God, am I ready to talk about Donald Trump and his administration? This has been, I think, the two single greatest weeks in the history of the White House. I cannot remember a two-week stretch where the president and his administration and Congress and really just the entire town of Washington, D.C. has been riddled with more headlines, with more fodder, with more scandals, with more conversation points. It has been the greatest week to be a podcaster, the greatest week to be a commentator. If you are involved in the world of politics, this is our Super Bowl. Forget the election, forget the inauguration, forget all the other stuff, the craziness that has happened in the last couple of years. This is what the Trump administration was put in place for. No, I'm not talking about repealing and replacing Obamacare. I'm not interested in that. No, I'm not talking about the ban on transgender people in the armed services. That would be silly. And no, I'm not talking about Jeff Sessions and the Russia investigation. No, we did not put Donald Trump in office for those reasons. And when I say we, I mean idiots on the internet with a podcast that like to laugh about politics. We put him in there so he could give us a gift that no one else could give us. And over the last 2 weeks, that gift comes in the form of Anthony Scaramucci. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, just like Trump can giveth, Trump can taketh away. Like a shooting star, Anthony Scaramucci came into our lives and left it just that quickly. Blink and you might have missed him, ladies and gentlemen. But I am ready to declare this right here and right now. There has never been a White House staffer, no chief of staff, no communications director, no press secretary, no attorney general, no one in any presidential administration that has made more of his playing time, that pound for pound has made more of a difference. If we're talking about MVPs here, and you know I love to do that. MVPs are some of the great fodder for all forms of talk radio. Never has a guy made more of less than Anthony Scaramucci. Let me give you some stats. Because, of course, I'm recording this on Monday, and Anthony Scaramucci just fired by the president. He is no longer acting communications director for the White House. He was brought in just as they ushered Sean Spicer out of the role of press secretary. This sort of represented a changing of the guard for the Trump White House. This was going to be the way that things were done from here on out. Old Anthony Scaramucci, the Mooch himself, was going to come in, clean things up for the Trump White House, and get this administration back on track. Let me give you some stats, ladies and gentlemen. Scaramucci fired 10 days after the president announced that he had been named communications director. That is less than 2 weeks. 6 days since he was unofficially named White House Communications Director, and 15 days before his scheduled commencement. Anthony Scaramucci fired before he even began his job. This is clearly the shortest tenure in the history of White House communications directors. Could be the shortest tenure. I haven't done the research on this, but could be the shortest tenure for any senior White House staffer. And one of the great lightning in a bottle stretches in the history of American politics. Think about this. I have not even said the name Anthony Scaramucci on the air yet. I don't believe, I might have talked about him a little bit when CNN was going on, but I did not even discuss this guy. I was ready to come on here today, talk about the Scaramucci New Yorker piece, which we will get to, believe you me. I was going to talk about that and laugh about it and say, wow, we have weeks and weeks and hopefully months and months and years of good stuff with this Anthony Scaramucci guy. This guy seemed like he had real potential in the world of podcast fodder. I was ready to come on here and with revelry and glee talking about Trump's new communications director. And before I even got a chance to do it, I now have to mourn his loss on the air. Few things about Anthony Scaramucci of note that make this two-week stretch one of the most magical, again, in the history of politics. Number one, the Mooch is the greatest nickname of all time. I don't even have to qualify it. Anytime you can get the word the followed by a one-syllable word, and that's your nickname. I always say this with Peter Dinklage on Game of Thrones. A lot of fans will refer to him as the Dink. I love shortening nicknames like that. The Mooch. And if you add Tony to the beginning of it, it's Tony the Mooch, which sounds like a character out of Goodfellas. Like when Henry Hill is introducing all of his colleagues at the bar, you know. Freddie No Nose, Frankie the Wop, Nikki Eyes, Jimmy Two Times, obviously. Oh, God. I've seen Goodfellas far too many times. But no, Tony the Mooch fits in right with all of those characters. That's such a Goodfellas name. It's either that or like a Tarantino character, you know? What, you called the Mooch? Why didn't you just say so? Why didn't you just tell me you were calling the Mooch? An incredible nickname. So succinct, it just tells you everything you need to know about Scaramucci. Anthony, Tony the Mooch, Scaramucci. Number two, I was so excited when Scaramucci was introduced. Because I know so many people in my personal life that are exactly like Anthony Scaramucci. I would not be surprised if I was actually related to Anthony Scaramucci. Some third cousin twice removed, their ex-wife's dog's owner is Anthony Scaramucci. I would not be surprised if that was the relation. Because growing up in an Italian family, a big Italian family, I was very much immersed in that culture. We are very direct. We are very to the point. We do not filter things. We do not speak euphemistically in any way, shape, or form. We are straight shooters. And when I saw this guy giving a press briefing, you know, doing the, oh, what do you want from me? Hey, next. Over here. You. Hey, you. It brought back this sort of PTSD memory of when I was a child sitting around the dinner table with all of my uncles, half of them probably named Anthony themselves. Either that or in my Uncle Dom's barbershop where, you know, you just hear the conversations that you hear and the articulation that you hear in an Italian barbershop, it is exactly, it is word for word what a Anthony Scaramucci press briefing is like. So that excited me very, very much. And I just could not wait to revel in more of these press briefings. I could not wait to see what a Scaramucci White House looked like. I could not wait to see what impact it would have on the president. If he would be more of a New Yorker than he is already. If he would be even more blunt. If he would be even more crude. Because the only thing that could make Donald Trump more entertaining is having an Italian consigliere. You know, next to the Oval Office giving you advice. I mean, the dude is literally like the Wolf of Wall Street. He is literally Jordan Belfort. Goldman Sachs guy, Italian, good looking, in his 40s, clearly has a jet full of Russian hookers somewhere at some point, somewhere in the globe at any given point. It was so delicious. It was just tasty. That's what it was. It was my taste buds began to salivate at the very thought of having Scaramucci in office or in the White House for an extended period of time. But man, it's a tough business. Politics is a very tough business. It's like Game of Thrones in here. It is like Game of Thrones in the White House right now. People are saying it's a reality show. It's the Celebrity Apprentice White House edition. You know, it's the Real Housewives. It's Survivor. It's all of these things. Everybody are they're making clever political cartoons, tying it into reality television. No, it is much more vicious and violent than that. This is below the belt Game of Thrones shit. I'm ready for like Littlefinger to emerge from the Roosevelt room, you know, ready to tell Kellyanne Conway how beautiful she looks. Kellyanne! All right, enough of that. Not even trying the Littlefinger impression today. We are not going to touch that Irish drawl. Nope. Not doing the Littlefinger voice. But no, but that's what this is. I mean, to think that Scaramucci was coming in, it was going to be a blank slate. He was going straight to the president, had a direct line to the president, was not going through Reince Priebus. As a matter of fact, he was the one, reports suggest, that got Priebus kicked out of the chief of staff job. To see him get kicked out before he even gets started is so bizarre, but man, that's the Trump White House. That is the state of the Trump White House right now. A fascinating power struggle going on right now. And sure, it's distracting from all the important issues that we have to talk about. Sure, we are one moment the John McCain healthcare vote is the biggest story. And now it's like Obamacare, what? It is an unbelievable sleight of hand here on the part of the Trump administration, if it is a purposeful move, which I do not suspect that it is. I think it's just a clueless president trying his best to keep up with an incompetent administration. Your White House communications director not understanding the concept of going off the record with a reporter. I mean, what do you want Trump to do? Man, I can't wait to see who's next. I mean, I haven't even talked about it. Sean Spicer is gone. RIP to Sean Spicer. Sarah Huckabee Sanders, by the way, is a phenomenal press secretary. She will, I'm sure, do fine, especially now that she does not have to stand in the mooch's shadow over there. But Sean Spicer gone. Sarah Huckabee Sanders has taken over that role. Who knows what the Scaramucci role will become from here on out. John Kelly, the new... John Kelly? Yes. General Kelly? I think it's John Kelly. The new chief of staff. And, man, Steve Bannon still hanging out. Kellyanne Conway still hanging out. to be a fly on the wall, guys. To be a fly on the wall for whatever's going on in the Trump White House must be an amazing thing. So there's that, man. Anthony Scaramucci, gone too soon. The Mooch. Tony the Mooch. The Wolf of Wall Street. Actually, he's not really the wolf. How about this one? Tony the Tiger of Wall Street. You like that? Tony the Tiger of Wall Street. You are not great. You're actually pretty bad at this. So many ways. That's the thing about this. Like, I could have had... It could have been the Scaramucci segment from here on out. Forget all these other segments and gimmicks and all that shit. Like, we could have just done This Week in the Mooch. Nice and simple. We could have had some Eye of the Tiger stuff. He's Tony the Tiger. Tony the Tiger of Wall Street. Tony the Mooch. Scaramucci, Scaramucci. Can you do the Fandango? Evidently, he couldn't do the Fandango. Oh, so many... These jokes are writing themselves. What is the Fandango, by the way? On a completely unrelated note. Is that a dance? What was Queen talking about there? What was old Freddie singing about in Bohemian Rhapsody? Can you do the Fandango? If you mean, can I order movie tickets with my fingertips at this immediate moment, then yeah, I can do the Fandango. Man, Scaramucci, Scaramucci is out of the White House. Thunderbolts and lightning. All right, man. Okay, so here's the deal, guys. We all know why he got fired. This is very... I have not given any political analysis whatsoever. I am such a clown. Please, if you come from me, by the way, for serious political analysis, if I am supposed to be the person of record, if I am supposed to give you the unfettered truth, you got another thing coming. I'm here to make Scaramucci jokes. So we all know why he got fired. He called up the New Yorker guy and like cussed out the entire administration. Just put everybody on blast. It was one of the great articles. I don't want to go too crazy with superlatives here. One of the great articles of the year. A fascinating read. So hilarious. And that was going to be the centerpiece of this week in the Trump administration. But instead, we have to sort of turn this into a swan song. So I enlisted a friend of mine to help me out with saying goodbye to the Mooch. And that friend's name is Gabriella DiGregorio, and she's my little sister. You may recall Gabriella DiGregorio from the famed Disney's Comment Corner a few weeks back here on the Nico Show. Well, I enlisted her help here. She was the only one that could appropriately give Scaramucci a swan song. The only one that I trusted to give him a proper farewell. I had Gabriella come in here and read verbatim the Anthony Scaramucci on the record comments to the New Yorker, an article that was published last Thursday, and we're gonna give a proper send-off to the ill-fated White House communications director, to the greatest nickname in the history of modern American politics, to the guy that was gone well before his time, the straight shooter of the White House press room, the Tiger of Wall Street, to the Mooch. Here is your In Memoriam.
Must have been cold there in my shadow. speak that to you. What I'm going to do is I will eliminate everyone in the comms team and we'll start over. They'll all be fired by me. I fired one guy the other day. I have 3 to 4 people I'll fire tomorrow. Rhymes Priebus, if you want to leak something, he'll be asked to resign very shortly. Rhymes is a schizophrenic, a paranoiac. Oh, Bill Shine is coming in. Let me leak the thing and say if I can block these people the way I block Scaramucci for 6 months. I'm not Steve Bannon. I'm not trying to suck my own. I'm not trying to build my own brand off the strength of the president. I'm here to serve the country. Done nothing wrong on my financial disclosures, so they're going to have to go themselves. What I want to do is I want to kill all the leakers and I want to get the president agenda on track so we can succeed for the American people. Okay, the mooch showed up a week ago. This is going to get cleaned up very shortly, okay? Because I nailed these guys, I got digital fingerprints on everything they've done through the FBI and Department of Justice. Yeah, let me go, though, because I've gotta start tweeting some to make this guy crazy. The swamp will not defeat him.
So stupid. Thank you, Gabby, for your help on that. I always appreciate it. Gabriella DiGregorio, a real superstar of the podcast game. Keep an eye on this kid. She's going places. I actually have a quick Gabriella story. Should I tell it? I'm just going to tell it. Gabby, I love that girl. She is really my best friend. I certainly don't talk to anybody more than I talk to her. And has really helped me in this game, in this business, in a business that, again, is very cutthroat. The podcast game, it's a tough scene. It's a tough scene to make a name for yourself in. And she has had my back every step of the way. But this week, she caused me a little bit of a headache. So I'm driving her to a family party, and I'm in the car, and she's in the car, and my brother Andre's in the car. And we needed gas, so I decided, hey, Gabby, do you want to learn how to pump gas? And her response is, no, Nico. Like the sane human being that she is, knowing herself, knowing me, knowing the circumstances, no, I don't want to learn. I'd rather sit in the car as you go pump gas. But I insist, because I am a good brother that wants to broaden my sister's horizons, that wants to show her the ways of the world and give her a little taste of life. I said, no, come on, I'll show you, I'll teach you. Now, in the back of my mind, although, see, the front of my cranium is saying, I am being a good brother, teaching my sister a lesson, helping her to grow up, teaching her a valuable life skill that may come in handy later on. That's going on in the front of my head. But in the back of my head, the sinister part of Nico's head, where all of the evil lives, I was thinking to myself, if I teach her this now, I'll never have to get out of the car anymore when I need to pump gas and she's in the back seat. I have a personal gas pumper. It's like in the state of New Jersey, they don't have any self-serve gas pumps. Like, it's the law. Someone has to pump your gas for you. Now I have that for absolutely free whenever I want it. So the motivations behind this lesson were way more sinister than they appeared. But nonetheless, she got out of the car and I instructed her how to pump gas. And again, my brother's sitting in the passenger seat watching all of this go down. And I'm saying, all right, here's what we're going to do, Gabby. First, I'm going to put the debit card in. I'm going to put my little pin. I'm going to hit this grade of gas. We're going to remove the nozzle, and I'm just explaining this to her, but she's doing it, right? You're going to take the nozzle out. You're going to put it in the old, what is that called? The tank. That's right. The gas tank. You're going to put the nozzle in the tank. You're going to squeeze down on the lever over there, and gas is going to begin flowing out of the pump, and you're going to fill this thing up till it gets to about $20. That's how much gas I want in the car. She says, okay, and she begins holding down the lever, pumping the gas. I tell her to stop when she gets to $20. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I have a lesson for you. And this does not just go for men of a certain age with younger sisters that want to teach them things. This doesn't go for parents. This does not specifically apply to children. This is a lesson about life in general, about dealing with any human being, regardless of age. When delivering instructions, specificity is the most important virtue. Nothing is more important than specificity. If you are giving instructions, this could be baking instructions, this could be a recipe. This could be instructions how to fix a car. This could be instructions how to fix an iPhone. It could be instructions for doing the laundry. It could be a shopping list. And it could be teaching your younger sister how to pump gas. But when explaining directions, if you don't want to do something yourself and you want to tell someone else how to do it, wording is everything. And the more specific the word, the better. Because my word choice here, I thought was specific enough, but evidently far too broad. I simply said to Gabby, stop at $20. When $20 appeared on the meter, I pointed it out to her and I said, Gabby, stop. Folks, the word stop, apparently not specific enough. I did not explain to her the process of stopping. Even though I explained to her the process of beginning the fueling process, I did not explain to her the process of stopping the fueling process. And when she said, take it out, I did not feel the need to answer her question. Gabby decided to take the nozzle out of the car. Now, normally this would not be any problem, except she missed one very important step along the way. A step that I did not feel the need to explain to her, but a step that is crucial nonetheless. She decided not to take her hand off the lever. And my very vague instructions resulted in this 14-year-old girl removing the nozzle from the car and spraying the side of the car, the inside of the car, her clothing, and my clothing with an endless stream of gasoline. Folks, the word stop was not enough, and that is why you must, absolutely must, be as specific as impossible with instructions. Because the thought did not cross Gabriella's mind, that beautiful little brain of hers, that if pulling the lever means gas comes out, letting go of the lever means gas stops coming out. Had to go home, had to change our clothes completely, and my car still reeks of a gasoline smell. And hopefully no one was set on fire at this gas station, because there was hella gas all over the ground. Thank you, Gabby, for that in memoriam segment. Thank you for making me reek of gasoline for about 24 hours. And thank you, the fine listener of this podcast, for listening to this edition of the Nico Show. We will be back here same time, same place. Well, actually, that's not true at all. I'll be here whenever I get the chance to do it. Thank you so much for listening. I apologize for my lack of punctuality, but I got a life. What do you want from me? I'm going to Kendrick shows. I'm going to see Hans Zimmer in concert. I got no time to be sitting here talking about the mooch. Sorry. I don't know what I'll be talking about next week, but I hope that you'll be with me for whatever that conversation entails. Tweet me at FunnyNicoTweets. Email me, Nico@2centsradio.com. I think the 2 Cents Radio Fantasy Football League is coming back sometime soon. It's almost fantasy football season, if you can believe it. August is here. So if you want to be involved in that, get a hold of me. I know 2 Cents Radio may not be up and running at full capacity. But regardless of when I do the next episode of that with Rob and Danny, we will soldier on with the Fantasy Football League. If you are interested, email me, Nico@2centsradio.com. And that is the same place that you can send me any sort of feedback for whatever shows I do at TooManyThoughtsMedia.com. TMT.media is the briefer way of getting to that very same webpage. The show Backers is on there with Nick and Zach. The show Movie Hopping is on there with Adam and myself. We had a fun review of Dunkirk last week that I highly recommend you listen to. Talking movies, having a great time over there. Subscribe to all of those shows on iTunes. Why is this a thing? Seems to be our most popular these days. And I have to be honest with you, it is the one that I am most proud of. We've been having such a fun time over there, and we just spent 2 weeks talking about the cult leader R. Kelly and his 33-part hip-hopera Trapped in the Closet. Have any questions? I'm sure you do. How about you go listen to Why Is This a Thing? We may be able to answer them. That's the only tease I'm going to give you. Why Is This a Thing? It is going very, very strong. And again, subscribe to that on iTunes. Leave a review. All that good shit. That's going to do it, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so very much for joining me. And until next time, please tune in to The Nico Show, where you, yes, you will finally hear the story of Lord Steve, the Mooch!
Rives is a bleep paranoid synsorectics.
That word.